This is Seismic Sessions, enabling the financial services industry, a podcast show dedicated to two things, revenue enablement and the financial services sector. Join us as we feature experts and leaders across the financial services industry who discuss innovative and impactful ways to sell, market and deliver memorable client experiences through enablement. Let's get this Seismic session started.
Hello, welcome back to our Seismic Sessions podcast, where today we're going to be discussing the role of community in financial services, touching on the impact of hybrid working on in-person events and communities, and how do we think communities will evolve in the future? I'm joined, as always, by my colleague Gemma Livermore, Head of International Financial Services Marketing here at Seismic. Hi, Gemma.
Hi, Rachel. Good to be back.
Lovely to have you again, Gemma. We're also joined by Claire Bailey, Marketing Manager at Evelyn Partners. Thanks for joining us today, Claire.
Hi, good morning. Lovely to be here.
Morning, Claire. And also Tony Margiotta. Thank you for joining us, Tony. Tony's Global Head of Membership at Rise by Barclays. And maybe to demystify that a little bit, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Rise, Tony?
Yes, indeed. So if we go back about 13 years ago, which seems forever, I was involved with a couple other gentlemen, and I think we had the very first co-working space in London, which was up in Bloomsbury. And it became very successful. We opened about three or four clubs, and then Barclays approached us and said, hey, we're Barclays, 300 years of wisdom in banking, but we just need to be able to speak to fintechs a lot better. Would we create, therefore, a bridge into the ecosystem? So we did, and we set up Rise, created by Barclays. We all got together. And then now we're currently in New York and London with around 120 to 130 companies spread across both those locations, predominantly fintech, with a splattering of sustainable companies as well.
Wow, that's fantastic. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that as we unpack our discussion today, Tony. I think you're going to bring quite a few insights to the conversation. So to kick us off, let's get started with an icebreaker. Our regular listeners will know that we start our discussions by asking each of our guests, what does enabling the financial services industry mean to them? So Claire, if we could come to you first.
Enabling the financial services industry. Well, certainly in terms of topic we're talking about today, for me, it's about sort of events and community and getting people together, particularly after COVID, I would say, where things have changed somewhat in the landscape.
Thanks, Claire. Excellent perspective. And Tony, your thoughts?
Yes, it's all about community, meetups, getting together and just enabling everybody to be able to have access to the whole community, the whole ecosystem, whether it's digital or in-person events. So that's really important.
Thank you, Tony. So let's delve into today's topic. In each of our podcasts, we split out the conversation with our seismic earthquake theme, looking at the tremors, where the movement started, how communities used to function in financial services in this case, the epicenter, how things have evolved and what communities look like today. And then we make our predictions for the future. What will be the aftershocks? How do we see communities evolving in the future? So with that in mind, let's start with the tremors. So firstly, we'll look back at how financial services used to be very siloed in the way it was set up. I personally remember the days when community used to be more of a frat club of who you knew and everyone having come from the same background, the same university, which made it very hard for outsiders to penetrate or feel included. So coming to you first, Tony, and given what you've already outlined in terms of Rise and the community that you've developed, I'd love to hear more about that and how that all began.
Well, I guess the initial ask from Barclays back in 2015 really shows that they realized, I mean, they were the first bank that really realized that needed to be more of a community spirit and getting together with these young fintechs from big corporate banks to understand what's really going on in the sector. So over those, since 2015, over those 8 years plus, I've really seen now that, you know, is really about getting people together, understanding who's doing what, but more importantly, knowing who are the main characters in the ecosystem. Because back in 2015 and before then, we didn't really know. There was separate entities across all the different sectors, and specifically, of course, in fintech. And so I've seen over the last 8 years how the community in general, not just in Rise, but in general, has got a lot better connecting people, which is really important. And people together to talk about fintech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's the power of those voices, isn't it? I guess, you know, enabling those discussions to take place, because that really is kind of where the magic happens when you start to break down those silos and you promote conversations across different sub verticals within FS, but also, you know, across kind of a diverse spectrum of individuals as well.
Yeah, and it's also cool that we've got all these different various organizations now across the ecosystem that is, you know, is big in supporting the sector, whether it's Innovate Finance or Tech London Advocates or London and Partners, or just some of the really good co-working spaces that really care about their members and promoting them. So we're quite lucky that we've got this vibrant ecosystem currently.
Excellent. It's really good to hear. And I guess, Claire, coming on to you, you obviously have a rich experience of developing community within Evelyn. So maybe, though, if we peel back the clock a little bit, could you tell us about your first experiences with community within financial services?
Yeah, sure. I've been in the industry, actually, sort of over 20 years in financial services. So I have seen quite a lot of change and positive change, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, initially you wouldn't sort of see much sort of community at all, or very restricted and very closed off. So things developing, I saw communities for young professionals sort of flourish. That was interesting. And networks for women more latterly have come to play, although perhaps initially they were sort of then very much at a sort of very senior leadership level, which kind of, I think, kind of closed ranks. I think was quite difficult for women, and that's got better. So I've seen some trends sort of along the way. And then sort of more recently at Evelyn Partners, so I spearhead our sort of marketing for entrepreneurs, fintech, financial services. And so, you know, we have this sort of fantastic series of events and webinars for our communities and for our partnerships. And, you know, those kind of formats are fantastic because you see perhaps founders coming together, C-suite, and also perhaps women in tech sort of type events where people can come together, make new connections, support each other's sort of businesses and ask questions about, you know, how to grow. And, you know, just to see that sort of develop has been really exciting and been really sort of fun to be part of.
Well, I love to hear about that journey and the way that journey has evolved. It gives a great perspective when you can see how far you've come, I think, and how much communities have developed during that time frame. I think turning to you now, Gemma, as well as your work at Seismic, you're very well known in the industry for the community that you founded, Women of Fintech, which now has over, I think, 4,500 members. So can you tell us a little bit about how that started?
Yeah, of course. I'm going to echo a lot of what's already been said here, which is, you know, I've been in the industry over 20 odd years. And back in the day, it was exactly to your point, Rachel, very siloed in the communities that were available. It felt like they were all internal communities, but you didn't mix with people outside of your company as much in terms of community, only when you were selling to them or connecting to them on a business level. And it felt very much like you only knew who you knew in that respect. Going forward, I'm a mother of many children, as many people know. And as I started to have my family, I realized I was being cut out of the few communities that did exist back then, because they were all after work or before work. And in those times where you needed to be at home, and all of a sudden I was cut off from having those interactions. And, you know, as people, as humans, we have always wanted to collect together, hence us like living in villages and towns and always needing that community side. And work is no different. You know, you need to actively participate in communities to help us stay relevant, share insights, foster professional growth and so on. And so to be cut out of that at quite an important time in my career felt really isolating. Also, at around that time, I was struggling with the fact that pre-COVID, there wasn't really any ability to flexible work when you were a parent. So there was also that isolation going on as well, if you like. And then just the third part that kind of made this all come together, the trilogy of the story, is I was also at the same time nominated for an award for being a woman in fintech. I was at that awards and there were over 300 odd women, a scattering of very few men, and everybody left frustrated with that same, you know, passion for wanting to make gender diversity more prevalent in our industry. And I looked around the room and I thought, God, there's all these powerful women who solve really complex issues day to day in financial services, and yet we're not working together to solve this really relevant issue in front of us. And I thought, I wonder how that would look if we came together to solve it. So I set up Women of FinTech. The reason it's got an over in the middle is I was very into Humans of New York at the time, which is a photographer that goes around telling stories in New York. And so in my maternity leave on my fourth child, because I can't do nothing, I'm one of those people that always has to do something, I started telling people's stories. And that grew to over 2,000 people within my maternity leave. And I realized I wasn't alone. There was a whole community of women feeling the same, but not just women. It was actually five men who helped me set up Women of FinTech. So there was a whole view of people that wanted to come together and make this change. And the incredible power of that community to date has been amazing in what we've achieved and what we've collectively done going forward.
Wow, that's a really inspiring story, Gemma. And I think you've really tapped into something there. I'm sure it resonates a lot with women listening to this podcast, but as you say, not just women. I think that, you know, there's something there for everybody as well in terms of the hybrid working piece, for sure, which I think segues nicely into the epicenter of our conversation and where we find ourselves today in terms of communities. So how communities have now evolved in the industry to be, as you say, externally facing. The industry, I feel, works together a lot more. And it'll be interesting to explore together whether that's maybe perhaps because the demands of the customer and customer service focus has shifted. And then also maybe we can talk a little bit about how hybrid working has impacted on face-to-face events, for example, that you mentioned, Tony. And communities and how inclusive they now are. So it feels like there's quite a lot to unpack here. So to start with this, Tony, I'd love to come across to you and talk about the inclusive side of communities. And I know, for example, that you create inclusive communities for ex-military folks. So if there's something there that maybe that you could expand on.
Yes, I think there's two questions there. First of all, let's talk about community. I realized quite early, and so did the team, that we had to change the way we created our club. We realized that this is before lockdown, and it actually applies to after lockdown as well in some cases. But we realized that there's so many co-working spaces out there in communities, but all offering the same thing, i.e. office space. But it's the value adds that you offer within that space or community that makes a difference. So as I always say to people, it's not about, you know, beer on tap or loud music or coloured cushions or table football. It's about content. It's about connections. And that's what certainly my members want. When I talk to my 60-odd companies at Rise in Shoreditch, I always say to them, how can I help you grow? And it's invariably about raising money. It's about their next hire. It's about getting really good quality connections and advice. And if you can collaborate, get all those collaborators together in one place or at the end of a call, then that's what makes a difference. So it's about that content that's really makes a really good community and members that care about each other. That's a really important thing.
That's a really interesting perspective. And can we come on to the other part of the question about how you're merging your two communities, Tony?
Yes, please. I'd love to talk about my other community, which I'm always screaming from the rooftops about it, and that's the military community. I was very fortunate, and I do miss it often, to spend 20 odd years in the UK Armed Forces and leave a number of years ago. But I realised over the last 5 years that there's a real vibrant ex-forces community out there, or even people that are just about to transition from the UK Armed Forces into civilian roles. And I realised that they needed some assistance, because they don't always know, or they tend to undervalue themselves when they're doing that transition. And yet they have so many transferable skills. So I'm hopefully this year about to launch a super app called Civvy Street, which is going to be about before, during and after service. And this is really getting down and dirty with the transitioning UK Armed Forces personnel and just giving them a heads up about what's going on in civilian life and then doing those connections for them. Because they're all really eager to go on their new mission, if you like. They just need a little bit of coaxing along the line, if you like.
That's fantastic, Tony. Thanks for sharing that. You'll have to come back in the future podcast and tell us a little bit more about how that evolves. Claire, can you tell us how Evelyn Partners is plugging in with FS communities? And I guess as an extension of that, how they prosper from that?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm a massive advocate myself. I see that because of the magic of events and communities, I've seen what a buzz comes from these situations. You know, from a personal view, having worked in this space for many years, that your creativity, that connections are made. And also from a, you know, from a business point of view as well, there's a sort of the power of, you know, we have the power, you know, sharing the power of good advice with our clients and our communities. And, you know, we're able to sort of do this by, for example, community events, etc., because of sharing content, information, education, supporting business growth, introducing businesses to the right people within our own networks, you know, ourselves. And obviously, it's really important as well for looking after our clients and, you know, helping our clients prosper. So, you know, events are really sort of important there for that. And I think, you know, the communities and the events, you know, only go from strength to strength that I've seen sort of, you know, develop. And particularly after, you know, COVID, I think the really interesting thing, I know we're going to get onto hybrid working as well, and there's things we can talk about there, but I think it's become so important, you know, for people, perhaps, you know, communities will perhaps talk together on WhatsApp groups or, you know, online or via sort of various forums, but then to have the opportunity perhaps to come together, perhaps, you know, with us for a quarterly networking drinks, a round table, you know, a breakfast on a particular topic to help them grow their business, could be on, you know, international expansion, for example. You know, and coming together and that real sort of magic of sort of, you know, sort of people coming together from different businesses, but sharing their experiences. And, you know, that sort of has become so important, particularly after COVID, and I can really see things flourishing in that area.
I love that. It's that kind of virtuous circle that you're describing there, kind of builds its own momentum. Yeah, that's great. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem.
Gemma, could you tell us about the community you're setting up for Seismic?
Yeah, of course. So I joined Seismic at the end of August, beginning of September, and I was really intrigued by enablement at that time because it's a new phrase that's being thrown around a lot, a bit like how innovation came around first of all, and then enablement seems that second wave of innovation. And I was really intrigued by it to know more about how you could enable people within their roles. I go to a lot of community events, as you know, not just my own, but I love going to other people's. I love that connection of listening to stories and understanding how other people fix their pain points. And I was at one, and there were about 16 banks around the table, all talking about their pain points. And at first, it was as if they were all covering their homework, should we say. And Tony, I'm sure you've seen this many times before as well. And it's like they didn't want to share, first of all. They didn't want to be the first person to share. And there was this very siloed view. And it took one person to turn around and say, it can't just be me who's rubbish. He used a much less PG version of rubbish, but I'll go with rubbish because we're recording. I can't be the only one that's rubbish at doing this around the table. I need more time. I can't do this. All of my time's taken up doing X, Y, Z. And so I never get to do the important parts. And suddenly there was this sigh around the table. And, you know, someone said, I thought that was a small bank problem. And the other person said, I thought that was a big bank problem. And someone else was like, I thought that was just me, you know, not being able to keep up with my role. And there was that moment of revelation of people understanding that if they spoke to each other, they could learn from each other and they could help each other get rid of those pain points. And after that, you know, everyone had a laugh and they all started speaking much more candidly. And what was interesting is not only bringing those people together to help realize that they all had the same pain points and they can work together to solve them, but they actually learned more once they really opened up from each other about what they had done that didn't work. And that was really interesting because suddenly they all saved each other so much time in saying, I won't try that then because you've said it doesn't work. And that sharing of information just really enabled them to move forward. And so the community that I'm building is really to ensure that everyone understands what enablement is, that everyone wants to do, or I say everyone, majority of people wants to do their jobs better. And they want to know how they can do it faster and quicker and save time and, you know, be more productive. And in the rise of AI, everyone's very intrigued. You know, suddenly we can see, you know, I'm sure everyone around the table here has used ChatGPT to do something completely unwork related. I know I have. I've used it to try and impress my teenage kids with rap songs I've made them. It didn't work at all, but yeah. I thought it was funny. But you can see how you can create something really fast that you couldn't create before, and how you can apply that to your role. And that sharing of knowledge is really important. So what I've done is started these monthly breakfasts. We bring in a different thought leader each month to set the scene and set the conversation. So it's not just us monologuing to people, you know, it really creates that community vibe. And it just gets people sharing information. And then we do quarterly lunch and learns where it's more workshoppy. So rather than just talking peer to peer, we bring somebody in that will teach them something. And then we do these quarterly supper clubs where, again, it's just a different level. So it's people that are much further along that enablement journey and want to share how they're bringing it forward. So that sharing of information is essentially what I'm creating.
Thanks for sharing that, Gemma. And I think what we've heard is three different perspectives, but all articulating the power of community and the value that it drives over time for folks involved in that community, and that you kind of get out as much from a community as you put into it. So thank you all for sharing those perspectives. And now a question for everybody, and you touched on it, Claire, earlier, because we can't talk about the epicenter without mentioning how the pandemic and hybrid working that followed shaped how communities look, feel, and interact now. So I'd like everyone to kind of give their thoughts on that. And I think this time, Gemma, we can start with you.
Yeah, I think COVID was a real friend for inclusion when it comes to communities. Going back to what I said at the beginning, where, you know, you feel isolated if you can't attend certain events. And Tony and Claire have both touched on it as well, in that not everybody can do person-to-person events for various reasons. You know, we think about the logistical aspect, but there's also the aspects of neurodiversity where somebody just doesn't feel comfortable going into a room and networking in that way. And so I think COVID really lent a hand to that inclusion side of us realizing community doesn't have to be face-to-face in this new digital world. You know, I'm in many communities that are WhatsApp groups or Telegram groups or other types of groups. And we interact on a daily basis, but in the comfort of our own home and in the comfort of how we like to interact. And then you've got lots of video, obviously webinars and stuff popping up, which suddenly meant that at that table, it wasn't just people that lived within a radius of London. You know, we were connecting and learning from people globally. And that was really impactful to understand how people were doing things in different parts of the world and how we could adopt those methods. So I think for me, hybrid working and the pandemic really added that level of inclusion to community that we didn't have before.
That's great. I love that. Thank you, Gemma. Claire, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, COVID hit and we had to move our sort of face-to-face events program online. And actually, it sort of gave the big nudge to move to live sort of webinar format, some on-demand content for our clients. And, you know, you had to adapt. And those sort of, now we're sort of after COVID, obviously, face-to-face events are super important again. But obviously, we've still got the sort of this sort of key digital, you know, offering in terms of getting communities together, because there's, you know, everybody sort of has to use Teams or Zoom or got used to doing it. And it's great that there's a sort of a hybrid program. So that's interesting. And, you know, we have some fantastic partnerships. So, you know, we support communities themselves, you know, with have certain business needs. And, you know, we're there, and some of the content that we may deliver now might be digital, but obviously face-to-face as well. What we've seen kind of really with live events after COVID is that actually they're key, but you might still see a sort of perhaps a higher drop-off rate than we used to pre-COVID. It's just an interesting thing that you see that, you know, people are still keen to get to events, but maybe because of hybrid working, it depends what day they might be coming in to work in the office and if that works with the events that are on that are face-to-face. And it's just, you know, interesting to see the kind of the challenges of sort of running programs, you know, post-COVID. But I think that, you know, some great stuff has come out of hybrid working for communities and events, as Gemma mentioned. So I completely agree, you know, on those points. And I don't think anyone's ever going to take for granted going to a fantastic face-to-face event ever again, having sort of all had to be at home for a long time. So, you know, those are my thoughts anyway.
Excellent. No, thank you, Claire. Thanks for sharing that. And Tony, what are your thoughts, I guess, particularly around the in-person events that you mentioned previously?
Yeah, so we were all worried when we got locked down, because certainly our secret sauce is always about being in person and being around each other as a RISE community, where we can really help each other and understand and apply a listening ear to everyone's woes. So we had to do, as already mentioned, we had to put all our events online during the COVID and ensure that all of our members had access to our database of mentors. So I was going around speaking to each of the members on a daily basis, or obviously not all of them in one day, but over the period of the week, just to check in and lean in to make sure everything is fine. And always say I always say a statement to my founders, how can I help you grow this week? Even if it's just, you know, a minute little helping hand, what can I do for you? So I was going around using Zoom and other platforms and just chatting with my founders and saying, how can I help you grow? And the drop-in sessions were really, really popular during lockdown, where people were just booking drop-in sessions with me or one of my team, just to open up about general stuff, not just necessarily fintech stuff. And it was really cool to keep that momentum going with the community. And since we've come out of lockdown, the only thing that's really changed for me, as for everyone, is that we realize now that we have those shoulder days, you know, the Monday and Friday, where people tend to be at home. But the Tuesday, Wednesdays and Thursdays are buzzing. So it's good to see that that's happening now.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's good. It's really good to see that that's back. Okay, we're moving on to the last section of our conversation. So we're looking at the aftershocks now, and really what we're looking to unpack is the future of communities. So what your thoughts are in terms of how communities will evolve, and perhaps how technology will play a pivotal role in connecting us all. And Claire, beginning with you, I would love to hear your perspective to how you see companies harnessing the power of community going forward.
It's a crystal ball one, really. I mean, I think in a way, perhaps we'll see more development of what we've just been talking about. Obviously, you know, as Gemma mentioned, you know, that there's sort of more WhatsApp communities now than they used to be, that, you know, seen that in the last year or two. So there's some online chat, and then there's sort of, you know, to support each other. And then there's the sort of the importance of the face-to-face aspects of bringing communities together. And I think that, you know, as people connect and communities grow, the way that they sort of keep in touch, you know, will become kind of very heavily digital based, because we're based all over and we're hybrid working. But I think perhaps, you know, people will still make time to perhaps put dates in the diary and come together where they can. But, you know, I think we'll just continue to see a lot of kind of reliance on digital communities, I think, in the future. And, you know, businesses will sort of have to adapt in terms of how they perhaps keep in touch with their communities, thinking of those sort of new ways of getting together, rather than perhaps the traditional formats that you know, that we've been using in the past, like email, for example, still important. But I think that the way communities keep in touch in quite an informal digital basis is just quite important. I think that'll grow.
Okay. No, thank you. That's interesting. And I guess throwing it over to you, Tony, because I've loved what, you know, hearing about how your community's grown from strength to strength. Where do you see the future of RISE? Do you agree with Claire, or do you maybe see a slightly different kind of trajectory?
No, I agree what's been said at the moment. It's a really strong mix of the digital, in-person, physical spaces. If you mix it all together and you have an offering that includes all those three, then you're onto a good thing. We realized just after Christmas that we need to change a few things up. So we decided on the physical side, when we talk about physical space, so we decided to create an area at RISE in Shoreditch, which is called the Hub, mm-hmm. Where people, members from upstairs, can come out their office, come downstairs, sit in a luxurious little big room, which has coffee, sofas, work areas, and telephone booths that's, you know, soundproof, but also open it up to the local community. So I was bringing in, as I do now, certain influencers who come in from different organizations. So there's a constant flow of people coming through that particular area, and there's lots and lots of connections going on there. But equally on the digital side, it's really cool to see what's going on with LinkedIn over these last 3 or 4 years, where it's become such a social platform. Mm-hmm. I often, if I can't get it from my own community, I just nip on there and say, right, who's the big guys in AI? Because I need a couple of panelists. And it's amazing how people just interact and say, I'm available, Tony. And it's just cool. So that digital side and physical is really important.
Yeah. And when you think they've got 1 billion users on there now, it's incredible the reach that you have on there.
Yeah. So I think we've got a lot of physical co-working spaces. I've got their head screwed on. It is really about providing a really cool place for a community to interact. But equally, you need to make sure that you've got the ability to do stuff digitally. And if it comes down to spending, then you need to do that as well.
I love that. I love this idea of omni-channel communities, you know, meeting people where they are. It's really powerful. Gemma, over to you. How do you see communities looking in 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I'm echoing a lot of what's already been said amongst our guests. But what I would say is I think there will always be a need for in-person, always, you know, just naturally we veer to one another. But I would imagine that there will be a much more interactive way that we can do hybrid events. Claire, I'd love to hear your opinion on this, because I know I've been to a few hybrid events that have just flopped, but I imagine that there is a space where they could work. Have you seen any success there? Or
I actually prefer to do one or the other. If you're doing to do face-to-face really well. Sometimes trying to do a stream from a face-to-face event, this is my personal view.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes it can distract a bit from the purpose of getting everybody together face-to-face, because it's a bit of a distraction if you've got cameras in and links and you're trying to link in people. And,
yeah,
you know, I think you could do a really impactful face-to-face, then absolutely do face-to-face.
It calls to my mind, I was on a panel where one of the people on the panel came in, and that was the hybrid nature, but their face was like 10 times the size of everybody else on the panel, so it became a bit comical. But I can see maybe a space where maybe someone can create a way that that does work, because I completely agree with Claire on one or the other.
It'd be great to see it. I don't think we're quite there. I don't think, you know, that the industry's there yet with the tech properly, because I think, as you say, it's a bit clunky. So that's one of the future points, Gemma, is that that'll get better and it'll be a bit less clunky.
yeah, exactly. I hope so. And then the future of events, I don't see events and communities changing too much, because I think the beauty of them is it's something that humans have wanted throughout the whole of humanity, is that community element. So I think that there's a need to not change them too much, because the beauty of the fact that they work is it's exactly what we need as humans. You know, we need that social connection and that feeling of belonging. Mm. You know, we need those shared experiences and learning, and we need it in a safe place where, you know, it's one thing to create them, but you need to create that safety and that trust that you can really share amongst those people. And I feel that if you change it too much, then it takes away from the essence of what we're all needing and wanting.
And I wonder as well, you know, with digital natives, you know, entering the workplace, and particularly as we look to the younger generations who, you know, are very kind of dependent upon their communities within their social networks. I wonder what kind of impact that will have, whether that will be an accelerator for communities as we move forward.
Yeah, and there's a whole generation of people that have come through into the workforce during the pandemic and didn't have that face-to-face contact, you know, on any level. And so their need and want for communities is going to be very different to all of ours. And that will be interesting to see how that connects with the other generations as well.
Can I just add something there about generations, which is putting a smile to your face? When we talk about the younger generation coming through, and they're amazing what they're getting up to now, but there was an occasion last week at one of our value-add classes, as I call it. We have a knitting class at Rise. My girlfriend runs it. She's a big knitter. And it was amazing. There was 7 or 8 individuals there knitting away. And they were all probably under 25, which seems forever for me looking back. But they were talking about FCA regulations. They were talking about AI. They were talking about raising money. And then they go, oh, I dropped a stitch. And I was in stitches, excuse the pun. I was in stitches on the periphery watching. I thought, this is crazy. This is a knitting class full of really cool developers and founders in two particular cases. chatting about really interesting fintech stuff. So you never know. You can throw lots of different ingredients at all different generations, but in the end of the day, they all come together and hopefully support each other.
I think if I could just chip on something on the sort of the people sort of up and coming, you mentioned, Gemma, I think it was you, that about people have come into their careers and jobs sort of perhaps started, you know, their job when during COVID. And I think, you know, how important it is for communities and events for people building their careers as well, just in terms of going to an event, learning to network, building your network, the knowledge that you acquire from attending events and meeting sort of other people. I think that's just a kind of a key thing just to help.
I completely agree with that. And I think the beauty of these events and communities is going back to what Tony said at the beginning, which is make it holistic and bring everybody from the ecosystem in. Because actually some of the best moments I've had from networking at these events is opening that unexpected door. You know, it's meeting somebody that I would never have thought to have met, and that unexpected magic that happens around it, in that, you know, you meet someone that maybe is in a completely different career to you, and it inspires you to do something, or you hear someone's viewpoint that makes you realize, actually, this is the way I should be doing something. And we all learn from each other. So yeah, I would say always open those doors and include everybody in communities that you're running.
Excellent. I think that's a great sentence to end on. I mean, in terms of this conversation, it feels like we've really scratched the surface. I think there's so much more that we could talk about, the power of communities and the value that they drive. We like to do a roundup question for each of our podcasts, just to try and summarize what we've talked about today. So I'm going to ask each of you to give me one word in summary, and then maybe in a sentence or two to explain why you chose that word. So it's a tricky one, I know, because we've kind of gone on a little bit of a journey in our conversation. So I will start with asking you, Claire, what one word would you give me that summarizes our discussion?
Buzz.
Oh, wow. I like that.
The buzz that comes from events.
Very onomatopoeic as well. That's brilliant. Tony, what would your word be?
Words for me. I just like the secret sauce of community. When you get a community together, magic and secret sauce happens. It's brilliant.
Brilliant. Thank you, Tony. And Gemma, what's your word?
I would have to go with inclusion, because I think that's where the magic happens around community, is where you include lots of people together and get those different tones of voice.
That's fantastic. So we've got buzz, magic, secret sauce, and inclusion. So fantastic conversation. Thank you all for joining us today on this Seismic Sessions, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Seismic Sessions, enabling the financial services industry. Don't forget to like and subscribe to stay up to date with the latest opinions on all things revenue enablement within the financial sector.